Chapter 5 On Crystal Island. Burr and Strelsky's agents watched everything that Roper did. They watched his boat, houses, helicopters and cars, as well as his company Ironbrand. They listened to his telephone calls to and from his people around the world. Then they passed all this information to Burr and Strelsky in Miami. But soon after Jonathan was taken to hospital in Nassau, no more was heard from him or about him. Rook had rung the hospital, and the receptionist had said,
"Mr. Lamont is here. He is doing okay."
But 24 hours later, Jonathan had disappeared without leaving an address. Roper had also gone, and Apostol could not tell them where he was. Everything had gone well until now. The two men chosen for the operation at Mama Lo's restaurant were from New York. They had had orders to try to take the boy, let Jonathan win the fight, and then disappear. Burr and Strelsky knew that the Pasha never passed Hunter's Island without stopping at Mama Lo's, and they also knew how much Roper loved his son. The days passed, and still nothing was heard about Jonathan. Should Burr return to London? Should Rook? Then, one morning, Strelsky was listening to Corcoran on the phone when he suddenly shouted to Burr,
"Leonard, listen to this!"
Burr picked up a second telephone and heard Corcoran's voice.
"Is that Sir Anthony Bradshaw?" he was saying. "This is Major Corcoran here, one of Richard Roper's friends."
"What do you want?"
The voice on the other end sounded tired.
"We've got an important question to ask you about a man called Pine," continued Corcoran. "His first name is Jonathan."
Then he gave him some information, including Jonathan's date and place of birth.
"The boss wants to know everything about him," Corcoran added. "And he wants to know it now. But you must tell no one about this."
"Who is Sir Anthony Bradshaw?" Strelsky asked Burr when the conversation between Corcoran and Bradshaw had ended.
Burr smiled slowly.
"Sir Anthony Bradshaw is an important English businessman and a crook. He used to work with Roper, and they know each other well. He's also much too friendly with some of the people at the River House, like Geoffrey Darker."
Burr had now stood up, and he was laughing loudly.
"He's alive, Joe," he shouted. "Jonathan's alive! You don't ask for information about a dead man. They want him. He's going to be part of Roper's team now."
When Jonathan woke up, he was in hospital, and Jed was sitting next to him.
"Can we call anyone for you, Thomas?" she asked gently, but he shook his head.
Everything hurt. Those men had kicked him hard. But they had to, he thought, if they were going to make it look real.
"Well, the doctor says that you must sleep lots and lots," she said.
And she gave him a glass of water with some pills.
"Thanks," he replied, smelling her hair. "I will."
She put her hand on his cheek.
"We really can't thank you enough," she said. "You were so brave."
He slept again, and while he was sleeping, he felt himself being moved. There was the sound of a plane's engines as it took off, and he knew that the bodyguards Tabby and Frisky were with him. Then they were in a truck.
He remembered looking out of the window and seeing tomato fields and a factory. There were beautiful smelling trees and a swimming pool with lights in it. After that, there was a huge house like a palace with a huge stone terrace. Then he slept again. When he woke, he was in a different room, but Jed was still there sitting next to him. He could hear people playing tennis outside, and bright sun came through the open window.
"Where am I?" he asked.
"Crystal Island," she replied. "This is Roper's home."
They talked a little. She told him about her rich family and her brother, who, she said lovingly, was an awful pig. She told him that when she was not travelling with Roper, she lived here at Crystal. She asked him about his life, but he told her very little.
"You had just that small bag. Is that everything you have in the world?" she asked.
He nodded.
"But someone must love you, care about you," she said.
When he did not answer, she started to talk about Roper.
"He's away at the moment, selling farms."
"What does he do?" Jonathan asked.
"Oh, he owns a company. Well, everyone does now, don't they?"
She smiled at him.
"He's a really lovely man. He has lots of farms all over the world, Panama, Venezuela. But we really want to know about you, Thomas. What were you doing at Mama Lo's restaurant after working at Hotel Meister's? It's so different."
"I got bored at Meister's," he replied. "So I decided to travel and see what happened."
"Well, we're very glad you travelled our way," she said. "Roper wants me to fly to Miami for a couple of days, but Corky's here and everyone wants to look after you. And we can call the doctor for you any time you need him."
Jonathan stayed in bed and listened to the sounds of the house. He heard cars come and go. He heard horses, children, and dogs. The days went by and the air was hot, wet, and heavy. Then, one morning, Corcoran came.
"How are we today, old love?"
Corcoran asked, and although he had his eyes closed, Jonathan could smell last night's wine and this morning's French cigarettes on Corcoran's clothes.
"I'd like to go soon," Jonathan replied, opening his eyes to see the large man standing in front of him.
Corcoran's pockets were full of pens and rubbish, and his shirt was wet under the arms.
"Make them run after you," Burr had said. "If you don't, they will get bored of you in a week."
"Of course," Corcoran replied. "You can go whenever you want, as soon as the boss is back. See you tomorrow, old love."
The next day he was there again, sitting in a chair in the corner and smoking a cigarette.
"Sorry about the ciggy," he said. "But it helps me think. Have you ever smoked?"
"A bit," replied Jonathan.
"I've been thinking a lot about you, old love," Corcoran said. "Is he Pine or is he Lamont, I thought?"
He waited for Jonathan to speak, and waited, and waited. Then he stood up and came towards Jonathan.
"The boss loves you, Pine. I do too. You saved his boy, so we all want to help you. But he's worried about you too. You can understand why. Meister told him that after you stole his money, you left Switzerland, ran away to England, and killed an Australian man. Something about drugs and calling yourself Jack Linden. The boss hasn't told anyone, of course, just me. But he's asked me to find out about you while he's away with Jed. You've met Jed, of course. Tall girl, very beautiful.
Then he touched Jonathan's shoulder, but Jonathan did not answer because he was asleep.